Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
This is All of It. I'm Allison Stewart. You know the feeling. You walk into the baking aisle of your local market, and instead of flour bags, you see dusty, empty shelves. Barely stocked bread aisles are the new normal, and coming home with bagels or eggs feels like winning the lottery. And forget finding yeast. Who knew there were so many bakers out there? Or maybe you were the panic buyer, and now you have in your cupboard your body weight in beans and powdered milk. Okay, today we're talking about how to make the most of the food you've already stocked up on and how to find substitutes for the things that you don't have. Our guest is chef and writer Jenny Dorsey. She's the founder of Studio Atao, a nonprofit that creates immersive experiences using food and art. She's also written on food and identity for Eater, Vice, and several cookbooks, including Mastering the Instapot. Her recent article in Eater, Make Restaurant Leftovers Your Superpower, shows just how far she can go to make the most of her ingredients. Listeners, we do want to hear from you. Get in on this team, All of It. What are some of the foods you stocked up on and why? What do you need substitutions for at this point? And what random stuff in your cabinets do you have no idea what to do with? Whether you panic bought black beans or black licorice, we want to hear from you. Jenny is here to help. The number is 646-435-7280, 646-435-7280. I put a sign up for the UPS guy not to buzz, but I guess he's just gonna. Hi, Jenny.
Hi, how are you?
I'm doing okay. You can also send us messages at All of It WNYC at Instagram or Twitter. All right, so Jenny, you're not new to this. People have sent you ingredients on your Instagram and you've given them recipes. What are some of the most common ingredients that people send you?
Yeah, I think a lot of people are working through their pantry right now. So I hear a lot of like, what do I do with my beans? I have 500 bags of beans and all of them are starting to taste the same. How do I make them more interesting? Or I panic bought a lot of flour. Like, how can I, vary up the different breads? Maybe you're not so into sourdough and you don't want to spend 12 hours making bread. What are some variations on un-yeasted breads or unleavened breads or easier breads that can be crispy or flaky or soft? Just getting some interesting textures going in their repertoire without having to perhaps add in more eggs or add in yeast or add in dairy. So those are two big ones. Yeah.
Oh, keep going.
Oh, yeah. And I would say like a lot of people have been using a lot of eggs. So mm-hmm. just like finding ways to eggs don't feel like breakfast all the time. So eggs can be a protein for any meal. It could be dinner and you don't have to be breakfast for dinner with eggs. It can be, like it's its own thing. So just talking about different ways to flavor up eggs and make them feel interesting.
Our guest is Chef Jenny Dorsey. Our number 646-435-7280. If you have something in your pantry that you bought and you just don't know what to do with at this point, give us a call or send us a message on Instagram at All of It WNYC. That can be anonymous if you like, or you can always tweet something to us. All right. We've been making a lot of jokes about beans, but a lot of people bought a lot of beans and probably are sick of beans and rice at this time. But, it's interesting. Yeah. I think of beans as being like part of cozy winter stews and chilies. Mm-hmm. It's going to be 71 degrees this weekend, Jenny. Mm-hmm. So what can we do with beans now that the weather is getting warmer?
Yeah, I actually really encourage people to try beans as salad and try them cold. There's great, you can have, of course, your like a soupy bean stew, but it doesn't always have to feel wintry. So you can also just have a stew that has slightly less beans or more broth, or you can cook those beans in a lighter broth in general and then cool them down, toss them with lots of different salad veggies or perhaps just like raw vegetables that you like, diced bell peppers, even maybe like some sauteed mushrooms, caramelized onions, cool that all down and have a bean salad. It feels like refreshing. There's a lot of, beans, unless you're getting a really, really heirloom variety, a lot of times will absorb kind of what you give it. So you can have a pretty neutral bean like a cannellini, and you're able to infuse whatever flavors you want into it. So if you use lighter, brighter herbs and spices like, let's say, dill or coriander seed, you can make that bean not feel so much like a really intense red kidney bean chili ground beef, sort of thing that has a lot of like paprika or cumin in it. You can lighten it up with other ingredients and make that bean feel like it's any, any suitable for any weather.
So this is interesting. On your Instagram, you point out that you can use bean liquid to replace eggs in certain recipes. How does this work?
Yeah, so this is something called aquafaba, which the vegan community has really embraced in the last few years. It's most commonly found in garbanzo bean liquid, it's found everywhere on all bean liquids, but the most potent and most reliable from the vegan bloggers and chefs out there seems to be these garbanzo bean liquids. So essentially, when you open your canned bean and you have that like nasty, murky liquid on top, you can actually save that and use it as a vegan egg white replacer. It's not completely the same, of course. No substitutions ever are. But if you put that liquid into a stand mixer and whisk it with, you know, your large whisk, it will actually eventually kind of turn into, it'll turn foamy, and then it'll kind of coagulate together the way egg whites do and actually form soft peaks. And you can use that in meringues. You can use that to kind of soften up or make the texture of a brownie lighter. You can use it to add volume to other baked goods like various cakes or cookies. And then on the savory side, you can also use that and make egg-free mayonnaise. So it's a really useful liquid. I believe you can freeze it. I've never tried, but I believe you can freeze it and then thaw and use it later. So you can always just save the liquid in a batch and use it whenever you want. So if you are out of egg whites right now, that could be a really good substitute.
So I have a question. Does it work better with certain flavor profiles than others when you use it? This bean water?
Yeah, because it has a beany taste, like it tastes like the bean that it was, I generally recommend if you're going to bake with it, to bake with something that is going to have like a more robust flavor. So, for example, if you're making like chocolate brownies, that's a great place because the chocolate is such a strong flavor that you're not going to taste the beans. If you're going to use it to make mayonnaise, for example, maybe you don't want it to be a plain mayonnaise. Maybe you want to do like a spiced garlic aioli just to give it something to complement that bean flavor, so then you're not like dolloping bean on whatever you're eating.
My guest is Chef Jenny Dorsey. She is taking your calls at 646-435-7280. We're talking about what to do with everything that you panic bought that is now in your pantry. So we've got, actually from Instagram, a message from Aaron. Mm-hmm. And Aaron says, sardines? What to do with canned sardines instead of just tossing with pasta?
Pasta is a great option. You can also use them if you pulse them into like small chunks. You can also use them as like an umami agent. Essentially, all fish sauce is fish that has, that's gone through something called autolysis, where its gut bacteria has processed the whole thing, and so you get that super funky, great fish flavor that complements so many savory foods. So you can kind of have a similar situation with canned sardines. Pulse them up, use it when you're, you know, cooking your mirepoix for a soup or for any sort of sauce. Just toss them in there, and it'll develop over time, and it won't be such an intense sardine-y flavor. You can also make a nice, great sardine toast with your beans, perhaps. So beans, greens, sardines on top of some toast is also a nice option. You can do like a little sardine. I know that people have very strong opinions about what they top pizzas with, but sardines, in my opinion, are great on pizzas because it plays so well with that umami tomato sauce flavor.
There you go. A whole bunch of different options for you, Aaron. I particularly like the greens, beans, and sardines situation. Let's go to John, who is calling us on line two. John, what do you have a lot of right now?
We have a huge amount of carrots. We are ordering from a restaurant supply company, and so we're getting just these bulk orders, and we have pounds and pounds of carrots.
All right, Jenny, what would you suggest for some carrots?
I accidentally overbought some carrots. I didn't realize I had some carrots, so I'm in a similar boat. If you're adventurous, you can try and make some carrot vinegar, and I can talk through that process perhaps offline, but essentially you're using the sweetness, the sugar from the carrots to ferment with some yeast and then turning that into vinegar. But on the regular side, you can also make carrots if you like cooked carrots or raw carrots. On the raw carrot side, you can make carrot slaw. So essentially taking a peeler and just peeling up all your carrots chopping them up and having this like in place of coleslaw. And you can also pickle them so that they stay. You can pickle them raw or cooked so that they stay for a longer period of time. You don't have to eat them so many carrots in such a short period of time. And pickled carrots, I really recommend like the easy Vietnamese version, which is essentially fish sauce, sugar, some salt, some sort of rice vinegar. I like to use rice vinegar or lime. You can keep that in your fridge for a while, and you can add it to different types of foods in the future, or making like a carrot relish. On the cook side, carrots are great for braised carrots. I really think that it can star as its own thing. It's also great incorporated into rice if you do like little chopped minced carrots with some raisins and make a rice peel off. That's also excellent. You can also juice your carrots if you would like to start your day with some carrot juice instead of orange juice.
Oh my goodness, so many options for you. You've got juice, pickled carrots, carrot slaw, and carrot vinegar. How does that sound to you, John?
Amazing. Thank you.
And you, I know you were going to say offline, but Jenny, I need to know a little more about carrot vinegar.
So carrot vinegar is an experiment that I'm doing right now. So I won't say that it has been totally successful, because vinegar does take a while to make and I haven't tasted the final product. But essentially the vinegar process is that you want something that's sweet in some variety, or like the easiest way to do it is use something that's already sweet. So for example, apples are common, apple cider vinegar, or grapes, or pears. You're going to like turn that into a mash and essentially add yeast to it so that it ferments. It's kind of a similar situation to what we're doing when we make beer. So you have this yeasty alcoholic version of your carrot or pear or apple. And then you're going to introduce a vinegar mother to it so that it converts all of these alcohol chains into acetic acid, which is what we taste when we have vinegar. So that process, if you use like the NOMA book of fermentation, they speed it up to be 2 weeks. The normal process is about 3 to 4 months. You're essentially just letting that process happen at room temperature. So slowly the acid will just like eat the alcohol and become vinegar.
My guest is Chef Jenny Dorsey. We're taking your calls and your tweets and Instagram messages about what to do with all the food you bought that's sitting there staring at you in your cupboard. The number is 646-435-7280. And our handle is @allofitwnyc at Twitter and Instagram. We're going to take a quick break. We'll get to more of your questions. This is All of It. My guest is Jenny Dorsey. She is a chef and founder of the Studio Atao, a nonprofit food and art company. We're talking about what you can do with what you have currently in your pantry, perhaps things you bought in a panic that you now think, what do I do with that? If you have any questions, you can give us a call, 646-435-7280. All right, we had a question about powdered milk. Powdered milk.
Ooh, powdered milk.
Yeah, so
an interesting thing to panic buy.
So, you know, when should you use powdered milk? Is it something it's more useful for in cooking than other times?
A lot of times powdered milk, I mean, you can use it in various cooking, like I would say the most frequently in baking, but I usually use actually powdered milk to make egg-free ice cream. I'm not sure if that's something people want to be making right now, but if you are able to, there's a really great recipe from Chef Steps that includes powdered milk to make vanilla ice cream without any sort of eggs. I really, really recommend that. But otherwise, for powdered milks, I mean, sometimes you'll also see it in various types of baking recipes to kind of lighten up. Essentially, you want a recipe that is using the powdered milk for a milk substitute, so you don't have as much liquid in the recipe. So that's where you usually see it. It's not super common, I would say, and I don't use it that much. But I'm happy to help this person by sending along some recipes that I've seen use powdered milk before. But I do recommend the ice cream recipe. Sorry, I can't be more helpful on this one.
All right, let's see. We have a question from Instagram. Suggestions for almond flour.
Ooh, I have lots of suggestions for almond flour. I also co-host a show on Well and Good about it's called Alt Baking Boot Camp, and it's all about gluten-free baking. So if you have lots of almond flour, it's a great time to explore gluten-free baking. It has a really nice, fluffy texture. It is a little crumbly, but mm-hmm. I recommend almond flour as for cakes and cookies. I think it demonstrates particularly well as maybe like some crust-esque recipes. Places where you want a little bit of that like crumbly texture is where almond flour is great. You can't use it in place of regular flour. Okay. However, almond flour with a mix of like usually coconut flour or oat flour is like a nice kind of, I think, medium flour texture to replicate in all-purpose blend. Just remember that when you're using almond flour, because it has no gluten in it, you're going to need something else in that recipe to help your recipe rise. So the whole point of gluten in baked goods is that it forms this matrix where it captures all the steam that's rising in your baked goods that gives it the height. So if you're using almond flour, that's not going to happen in your recipe. So you'll need something else, whether it's baking powder or eggs or a flax egg. If you're vegan, just know that you'll need to add additional types of leaveners into your recipe. I really recommend using almond flour for like an easy cookie recipe. I've been making it for the last, like, I would say 2 weeks, since it's the only flour that I currently have as well, in addition to all-purpose. So just a little bit of, and I have the recipe on my Instagram. It's like almond flour, some sort of oil, any sort of coconut neutral oil is good, as well as some flax eggs, or you can use regular eggs if you happen to have eggs, a little bit of liquid sweetener. You're going to mix it all together and just bake them off into little cake cookie discs.
All right, Carol is calling us from New Jersey. Carol's on line 3, and she has a question. Hi, Carol. Thanks for calling All of It.
Yes, you're welcome. Do I talk?
Yes, talk.
You didn't record me?
Yeah.
Oh, great. Hi, I love your show. Thank you so much for all the great suggestions. I'm calling about desserts that aren't awfully sugary and maybe have some fruit as a base, you know, like cobbler mm-hmm. or something like that, but isn't too floury and carbohydrate-y, and oh, that's a big challenge.
what can you offer, yeah. Carol, Jenny?
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of like, I recommend using things, since we were talking about almond flour, there's a lot of nice like vegan or gluten-free recipes that don't use any sort of flour. So you can kind of make like a crumble that's mostly fruit-based or has a little bit of liquid sweetener, and then uses something like oats or maybe it's like almond flour or oat flour to help bring it together. So I'd recommend something like that. Also think like granolas in this time is nice. You can take fruit and also dehydrate it and add it to your granolas. So that adds a little bit of sweetness. You'll still need a little bit of liquid sweetener to keep your granola together. But if you don't want to use any sort of sweetener, you could also make essentially like a extra awesome muesli, where you just bake off some oats, add some seeds of your choice, nuts, and then some dehydrated fruit, and that would be a nice snack too. You can add that if you don't want any flour in your dessert. You could have like some caramelized bananas or some fruits, and then add your granola muesli mix on top for some crunch.
There you go. Carol, good luck with your baking. From Instagram, we have a question about egg-free recipes for frozen mixed vegetables, like that broccoli, cauliflower, carrot mix you get.
Sorry, one more time. Egg-free recipes for mixed vegetables?
Those frozen mixed vegetables you get, you know, the kind in the bag, it seems?
Uh-huh. Oh, things to do with the just the mixed bags without eggs. Got it. I would recommend a stir fry. You definitely don't need an egg for a stir fry. They're also nice. If you have some sort of shell that you could put it in, you can also turn that into like a little mini pot pie sort of scenario. Another thing that's easy that you could do with those is make what would be been like a Thai larb style, which is usually with ground pork or chicken, but you can stir fry your veggies instead, and with a little bit of fish sauce, lemongrass, galangal, or honestly whatever flavorings that you currently have that you like, and use like cabbage as like your little scoop and eat that together. You can also steam them together and make like a sauce out of them. You can steam, puree, and then turn it into kind of like a, whether it's chunky dip or a chunky sauce. You can use it, honestly, just spread across like a pizza in lieu of tomatoes. You can add tomato to it and make like a chunky, super fortified vegetable tomato sauce, too.
Let's go to, we have listeners helping listeners. Mark has a great idea for some carrots. We're doing the throwback to the carrots. Hi, Mark.
Oh, yeah.
Hey, how you doing?
Doing great. So you know your way around a carrot, sir?
I used to work at a restaurant called Rosewater in Park Slope, and we made a great carrot dip. You cut them in coins, roast it in like a hot oven, like 400 degrees, so they start to brown a little bit, in olive oil with some cumin, and then you grind it all up in a food processor with cilantro and lemon juice and more olive oil. It's great on a sandwich, or you can use it on like a Mezz platter. It eats up a lot of carrots.
Well done. Thank you, Mark. We appreciate it. That sounded really good, didn't it, Jenny? It sounded really good.
Yeah, and I've been to Rosewater. It's a great restaurant.
My guest is Chef Jenny Dorsey. If you want to ask Jenny a question about what to do with whatever you have a surplus of for whatever reason at this moment, 646-435-7280. I actually want to flip the script a little bit because people have been writing us about, and we've seen it everywhere, that there's no yeast to be had, that the early mm-hmm. bakers got out there and cleaned out the yeast. So what is a bread I can make that doesn't require too many ingredients?
I really recommend making lots of unleavened breads during this time. So two nights ago, I made parathas, which are kind of like an Indian flatbread. And you'll see this variation on a very flaky bread across many different cultures. In China, you'll see them as scallion pancakes. It's a very similar technique. Essentially, you're making a dough base with some sort of flour, and you don't need yeast like flour and water. And you're mixing that together, letting that rest. You're rolling them out, and then you're dividing them into long coils. In the case of paratha, they add ghee in the middle, and then you're rolling them up. In case of scallion pancakes, you're adding scallion, usually sesame oil. There's also a Kenyan bread that's similar, and I believe in the middle there's garlic. So you're adding some sort of like fat and maybe flavorings once you've rolled out this bread, and then you're going to coil it. You're going to roll it up on itself the way that you into like a little cylinder, and then roll it again on top of each other, flatten it out, and then re-roll it back out into like a large kind of circle. This way you're trapping all of the little layers of fat in between the layers of flour. And so when it cooks, that steam again rises in the flour and creates those nice flaky layers that you want. And you don't, again, need any yeast for this.
Brooke from Twitter, we can't, lots of bread questions. Brooke from Twitter, help. I have risen sourdough in the fridge ready to bake, but no Dutch oven.
Oh, yes, this one's tough. It's not going to be the same effect. However, you can just use a pot, the heaviest pot you can find with a lid. The idea behind the Dutch oven is that it, you know, captures heat really well, and is able to saturate your bread with steam, so that really helps the rise, it helps texture, etc. But if you can't do that, you know, get your oven really hot. Usually I'll start it at 500, put your pot, with a lid in there, get it really hot, carefully transfer your room temperature bread into said pot, cover it back up, get it back into the oven, lower your temp to 450, and you will still see a risen bread. I've done this before when I didn't have a Dutch oven as well. It often will not quite rise as well, but you will still get a tasty bread.
All right. Good luck to you, Brooke. Let's go to Kern, who is calling us from Jersey City. Hi, Kern. What do you have? What do you need help with? Kern, are you there? Kern does not seem to be there. Maybe while we get Kern's figured out, I want to ask you about what if you're baking and you don't have vanilla? I've had this happen, and it's paralyzing, I tell you, Jenny.
Yeah, it's definitely tough. Vanilla extract, if you don't have it right now, it's like, I mean, I think some places have it, but if you don't have it, I would say either omit it, or if you have another extract that you might like, I think almond is not exactly a substitute, but it adds some of that nice toasty notes that you might want. Otherwise, most of the, unless you're making like a vanilla cake, you know, that's supposed to taste like vanilla, many times it's like a little bit of vanilla. If you omit it from the recipe, it's not a huge deal.
Let me check our clock if we can squeeze in Debbie. I think we can. On line four, Debbie, can you ask your question quickly?
Yes, hi. I was going to suggest an alternative to flour. If you can't get flour and you happen to have Quaker oats or some kind of oats, just grind, put them in a blender, dry, and they go into a powdered flour very quickly. I made a friend who's gluten-free a birthday cake using that. And what I love as far as a cake, the easiest cake to make that doesn't require eggs or dairy is the crazy cake. And you'll find that recipe. You can just Google it. It's a Depression-era cake.
Oh,
and you
I've
can
seen
use,
this everywhere.
Cocoa powder.
Yeah,
it's wonderful. And what I do is I double the recipe, and I make it in a Bundt pan. I just made one this week. I was trapped with this delicious cake, and it's so moist that it's almost like peanut butter in your mouth. It's so moist. And the thing is, you can, if you make it in a Bundt pan, use a separate mixing bowl because you're going to, you know, have a much, you know, much bigger batter. But if you're making it just in a cake layer pan, you can do everything in that layer pan. You can mix it and bake it in the same pan. So it saves you on eggs.
Yeah, it's really a lot of fun. Debbie, thank you so much. So Jenny, in our last sort of 40 seconds, if someone's going to the store and you want them to pick up one thing to try new, what would it be?
Try that's new. I would recommend trying a different veggie that you've never had before, whether it's like fennel or perhaps you're using chard or maybe you're doing lemongrass. I recommend like really stocking up on different types of vegetables that perhaps you felt uncomfortable using before, or
something new, right?
Always...
Yes, we're just going to tell our listeners to pick something new. We're just at the end of our show. Jenny Dorsey, check her out on Instagram. Thanks a lot, Jenny.